Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, it's me, Mike. I run the Sonar Podcast Network, the very one you're listening to right now. I love podcasting and I love the Canadian podcast community. And if you're a podcaster, work in podcasting, or just someone who loves podcasts, you're going to want to listen up. I'm proud to announce that I've been working very hard behind the scenes on an incredible podcasting event in Toronto on June 6th, the Soundwave Summit 2024. And as a Sonar listener, you get 15% off on all tickets with the code SONAR15. An awesome group of podcast companies and creators have banded together to create a space for podcasters and fans to build community, share knowledge, and celebrate indie productions. There will be a ton of informative sessions all day, including talks from Canada Land, Vocal Fry, Black Canadian Creators, Lead Podcasting, and of course, from us, the Sonar Network. And in the evening, there will be a showcase of live podcast recordings from Blacklantic, Squirrel Talk, and the Women of Ill Repute. And it's all emceed by the amazingly talented and Survivor-winningest host of Happy to See Me podcast, Erica Kostupinen. Join us for insightful workshops on podcasting, networking with industry pros, drinks, and overall amazing opportunities to meet and collaborate with like-minded podcast lovers. Come for the sessions in the day, the live podcast showcase at night, or better yet, come for the whole thing. Tickets are going fast, so get them now at thesoundwavesummit.com. And don't forget to use the code SONAR15 for 15% off all tickets. That's SONAR15. See you there.
Hi, it's me, Ben.
And it's me, Abba. And you're listening to Nostalgic.
Hello, Abba.
Hello, Ben.
You're listening to Nostalgique. I don't think we've ever done that. That felt weird to me doing that just now. It's like they know. We treat our audience with respect and that like we know that they don't need to be reminded because the name of the podcast is on their phone when they're listening. We're not like the other podcasts who feel like we need to spoon feed it to you. Okay. We know that you're grown-ups.
Okay, not to go on a complete departure from spoon feeding, but I was looking at our metrics the other day, and we have listeners in, like, Ivory Coast, like, four. But I think that's so... Like, do they know each other, the four people
who are listening? I was just gonna say.
Yeah. Are they a friend group?
I really hope it's four friends. Me too. I hope it's four friends.
And I just think it's so funny that they might have just stumbled across the podcast because it's in French. The title's French.
Oh, and then they're like disappointed.
They're like, wait, what? They're like, okay. Wait. I literally in my head, I was like, how do you say what in French? And immediately went, que? Like, pardon is what they
pardon.
Say.
Pardon.
Can you guys tell I stopped taking French in grade 9?
Oh my God. I truly, it's such a bummer because there was a time when I was decent at French. I was never
great. Did you ever go to immersion? French immersion?
I was never in immersion, but I was always in high school and middle. No, not in middle school. When I got to high school, I was in like enriched French, where it was like, it was just like a class where like we could only speak in French and like it was more conversational.
Yes.
And then I like was like moving to Montreal after high school. And I remember feeling like I've got this. Yeah. Like I'm going to be Well, it was before Emily in Paris, mm-hmm. and I'm not going to say that they robbed my life experience, but it was very Ben
in Montreal. It's very similar to your likeness, is what we're saying.
Famously, before there was Emily in Paris, there was Ben in Montreal.
Ben in Montreal.
But can nobody, you tweet that? I'm actually going to tweet that. That's very good. That's pretty funny. But literally, watch it. Like, the episode comes out way past that. I've tweeted that. The tweet only gets 8 likes.
I think they just announced season 2, so it may be topical.
Oh. Trending.
Trending. Maybe she's trending.
But nobody spoke French to me in, excuse me, in Montreal. Oh, wow. Because, like, you speak to them and automatically, like, yeah. they know you're an Anglo. And I get it. I honestly get it. Mm. Like, I would be, if it's easier for me to understand, yeah. like, I take that route too. Yeah. It's like when people are drunk and they're like, oh, like, I speak a bit of Spanish. Like, can we practice? I'm always like, girl, we're not going to do that. Ever will do that. It would be like, oh, like, I'm going to, like, Costa Rica for a trip. Can you teach me a couple of phrasings? I'm like, I can do you one better. If you open your app, there's an app called Duolingo. And that they will do that. And they'll send you my time won't be wasted. They'll send you a link.
Exactly.
And I hear Duolingo, you, like, there's, like, little emojis that kind of tell a story throughout. Like, your emoji becomes more cultured as you get more, like, versed in the languages.
Yes, you get, like, medals. Like, there are milestones. Yes. Yeah.
And they, like, trap, like, the emoji will be like, you're good enough to, like, go to Italy now.
Yeah. I'll never learn another language, like, on my own. Like, if I ever book a role where they're like, you have to learn how to speak German, like, I'll do it, but I won't do it well.
Like, you in the audition room, I'm going to tell you right now.
I'm not going
to
do it.
I'll do it. But now all I want is to see you in, like, a German movie where you're speaking German.
One time we did, it wasn't Hedda Gabler. It was that one classic German Brechtian play that you have to do in high school.
I literally know this isn't the answer.
It's like Mother something.
Oh, Mother Courage.
Mother Courage.
Okay.
Mother Courage. When I was doing Mother Courage in high school, I had to learn a bit of German, and I did a pretty good job. My teacher was like, that was really great, and then I never could do it again. Like, every other time I tried to replicate it, people were like, that sounds like a slur. It sounds like you're cussing me out. I don't want to hear this.
You know what I remember from Mother Courage is the famous silent scream.
Yes.
That's iconic.
The famous silent scream.
When she can't reveal that it was her son who was killed. Yes. I can't believe, see, this is why theater school is so toxic, is like, as hard as you try to forget,
you can't. You're always a theater kid. Your entire life, you're a theater kid. And it's sad, because I'll watch people who are, the thing about theater kids is that if you grow up and you become somebody who has depression or is anxious or is, like, kind of like, there's a darkness inside of you, you're, like, automatically cool and cultured. But if you're, like, if you've just always been a happy theater kid, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
If
you're in it just for the jovial nature, it's like, no.
Go to hell. No, you have to be.
Because.
Multifaceted in your theater kidness.
And I'm the type of person who will still, like, I will have a lip sync in my bedroom or in the shower to a musical theater song where tears will be streaming down my face. I'm literally picturing the Drag Race judges, like, crying. Like, it cuts to Michelle Visage and she's just like fingers under the watermark of her eyes.
I love how you automatically go to the American Drag Race and not the Canadian one. I feel like this is betrayal.
Oh, no, I would actually prefer if it was, like, Brooklyn turning to, like, Stacey. Be like, or no, what's her name?
Yeah, Stacey.
Okay. Yeah. Mackenzie.
Stacey Mackenzie.
Okay, Mackenzie. I forget everyone's name. Who's the other? Jeffrey Boyer Chapman.
But I don't, like, is he going to be in the season? I hope so. People gave him shit.
It really, our guest has given an insider head nod to no. No,
wow.
and a hand movement as well that told me
they
never
better
again.
Replace him with another black person. I know that's right.
They should.
Like,
yeah.
I just feel
it. It really did seem. It's like, whether you disagree with his critiques or not, the amount of hate where it's like,
it was stupid. Michelle Visage has said transphobic, homophobic, like, slut phobic, like, the most disgusting, vile
so
things.
Much.
And people will buy her stupid little skincare brand. Actually, that's a lie. They don't. But, like, people still support
truly.
Her.
And even still, like, they're like, Michelle and RuPaul will perpetuate, like, worse microaggressions than whatever people were accusing Jeffrey Burrow Chapman of. And if you go back to the earlier seasons, it's
no group is safe. RuPaul is literally fracking, and people are like, Jeffrey told someone to put makeup on their butt. I mean, I don't agree with any body shaming, but telling someone to put makeup on their butt, there's a nice way to say it. And it definitely is a thing where you have to put makeup on your butt if your butt is going to be on stage. Unfortunately, like, people just put makeup on their butt to perform if it's going to be out.
Also, just like the queens, like, I feel like at the time, and maybe I'm misremembering it, but I feel like even Alona or the queens who are like getting these like back critiques were tweeting being like, guys, leave like Jeffrey enough. Yeah. Like, it was a show. Like, they're all doing their jobs. And it's true. Like, it's like, I don't think Jeffrey Bora Chapman is the type of person that goes around telling people to cover their ass with makeup. I think he was doing a job, and he knows the type of roles that need to be filled on a panel. And he was like, some of these critiques have to be harsh to make a dynamic episode. And he was just kind of fulfilling his job.
This isn't Great Canadian Bake. Is it Baking Show or Bake Off?
Baking Show.
Baking Show. This isn't
Baking Show.
This isn't that. Like, not everyone's going to be tutti and sweet to you, okay? It's not Anne Pornell and fucking Alan Shane.
This is not Anne Pornell.
It's not Sweet People.
Except she would make a she would make a great judge on
Yes. Absolutely. She would make a great judge on Drag Race. Absolutely. And I think that...
Her in a comedy challenge?
Woo! Who can we talk to about this? What producer do I have to talk to get them to make this happen?
Like, we might know somebody.
You know who else I think would make a great judge on Drag Race? Okay.
Our guest.
He's a very special person. Very special to me personally.
Truly.
He's very, 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 very stacked in terms of his credits. Just to call Brandon stacked, period, is very funny to me. He's very stacked. But he wrote on 22 Minutes. He wrote on the Beaverton. He wrote on Beaverton. Tall Boys and Gary and His Demons. There's more.
Oh my God. Head writer of Entitled Black Sketch Project. I know,
that's
Which ABBA is a part of.
Which I am a part of and happy to be a part of.
So many past guests of this podcast, Coco Galore, Brandon Ash Muhammad, Adonis Charlie, all a part of it. So follow Entitled Black Sketch Project on Instagram.
Please do.
And stay tuned because there's big stuff coming.
There's big stuff
coming. And an alumni of Second City, Main Stage, which is huge.
And when I was taking conservatory last year, RIP, who knows if we'll ever be in a physical Second City building at all.
Who knows?
But whenever we had to watch like the older reviews and stuff like that, I was always like, I'd always go to Brandon's stuff. I was like, this is written well. Wow. This is really fucking funny. I love the perspective of this. It has a statement. It has something to say. So I've always stand, and I do continue to stand. So please welcome to the podcast, Brandon Hackett.
Hi. Hello.
Yay. Hi.
That was so nice. Thank you very much.
Of course. It's all true.
Oh. It's true. These are just, we literally listed facts.
Yes.
We
deal That's with facts do, Brandon. On this podcast.
We deal with facts. No, we do not.
We really don't.
We really cannot say that. Yeah. If you're a new listener, we'll say this now. We deal in theories and rumors and gossip. Mm-hmm. In thoughts and feelings. But Brandon, welcome.
Thank you
to the
for
pod.
Having me. It was so nice hearing you both talking, by the way, just now, because I just wanted to keep chiming in so much. There was so much that I wanted to say.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
That makes me happy. Yeah.
Well, now's your time.
Yes. Well, I guess I was thinking of like the theater school sort of stuff. Might have been in the same program, but like years apart. Were you ever? I don't know if you want me to expose your life on your podcast.
No, yeah, of course. Yes, expose. No, I was at U of T.
Well, yeah, but the drama program there is the UCDP, so like through University College.
Is it?
Yeah, it's called University College Drama Department.
Oh my God, it is University College Drama Department. I'm so sorry. Oh, I always, God. In my head, I'm always like, yes, Helen Phelan Drama Center.
Yeah.
Oh my God, you're right. It is. Oh my God, the acronym.
Yes. ABBA finally checks their diploma.
Pardon? What did you say?
You finally check your diploma. You're like, it says what?
I'm like, oh yeah. No, it doesn't. It never says on your diploma. It's like, this person studied something that's never going to make them money. And yet.
Right.
But so you were at the U of T.
I was there for
program.
Like 1 year. So it was my second year because I think you still audition for, you have to audition for it. And a lot of people do it for like their second year. I did it for like 1 year, and then I was like, not for me. Then I just did art stuff on campus, like plays and stuff.
Nice. That's good. I feel like you took the better route because I stuck through. Like, I stuck it out for the program, and I wish I hadn't.
Oh, really?
Was
Pia Klaiber still there?
Pia, yes, Pia was still there. I had Pia. Pia taught me theory. Yes. She taught theory courses.
Very cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's such an interesting academia program. It's very heavy on theory and lectures, which I think is good. But it's a lot of stuff to do at U of T because all your classes act like they're the most important classes. But your drama classes, which should be the most important, are always like way too stacked.
Yes.
Like everything is
For sure. And they tell you, they're like, well, you shouldn't be doing theater outside of this program.
Yeah.
Or whatever. Yes. I just want to do comedy. So I was doing comedy a bunch on campus. And then I was just like, I can do this and study something else.
Exactly. Yeah.
Once you realize you could get lost and you're like, wait, I don't have to kind of just like stand on stage for 20 minutes while the character talks. Okay, could just be me. Yeah. I was like, I definitely prefer this. Mm-hmm. That's U of T sounds so scary. Like I went to Concordia for creative writing, which is very much kind of like a drop-in yoga class at the university. Yeah. Like it was really kind of like you make it work for you. And if anything, they were like, please, like if you miss university for like a poetry reading, do that. Like we prefer it.
That's so helpful. Yeah.
Which I mean it was, but that also created a lot of leeway for professors to get, I'll say it, fired for sexual
misconduct. Okay.
So Big scandals. My third year, my program, which was very small, was rocked by a scandal. Like two professors were fired, and one of them was my own. And he would like was part of like a mini, like Montreal magazine, and he would like publish students' work. So it was like very toxic. But at the time, it's like you're 20, and your professor is like, "Oh, I want to publish your story." Yeah. I was like, "This is the beginning of everything."
Yeah,
like I'm Lena Dunham now at this point. Yeah. So, yeah.
Oh
but
God.
I mean, here I am.
Here I am. Still here we all are.
But theater school is a very interesting environment. I did 4 years of arts high school, so it was like theater in high school. Mm. Which, oh, what
I
school?
Went to Cardinal Carter.
ESA.
So I was up in North York.
Shut the front door. Cardinal Carter, rich history, because I did Canadian improv games, and it was always like my school up against.
Where'd you go? What was your school?
And
Rosedale.
Yeah. The messy one.
The messy one. Everyone knows it is the messy one. Yes.
But Cardinal Carter always, we are messy. Cardinal Carter, I feel, was very like, they were like, because it's like a, is it, I correct me if I'm wrong, like a Catholic art school? Mm. Okay, yeah. Because they seemed very like, we were like the girls who reeked of cigarettes, and they were like, we practice for like 5 million hours and we're going to win all the categories at Canadian Improv Games.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, that was Carter. I was only in the improv team for 1 year with Monica. I don't know if you know Monica.
No way! That's wild.
So I was on the team for 1 year and I like, I was very bad at it. Because I was 16 years old. Well, yeah, because I made a career out of it eventually. Revisiting trauma as a job. Very, very. but it was like the 1 year that I did it, it was like the 1 year I did not get on the honor roll because it was just like every, we were just rehearsing all the time, like after school. We had March break and we rehearsed a bunch of March break. And I lived out of town, like I lived in Pickering and had to like, come into North York for like March break rehearsals and stuff like that. But they were super, they were super serious about their improv team and still are, I think. Yeah.
Really, it truly, that was the thing. It was like province wide known. It was like a reputation thing. Like Cardinal Carter, they are like vicious and they will eat you alive. And it was like true. They would do like elaborate, you guys would do like elaborate like body improv. Like people would make like a dartboard and someone's like flying through the air as like a dart. And like a big guy's like carrying like some like small girl. And she's like, wee, I'm a dart. And like everyone's like, yes! Like going, like just having the best time in the audience. It was, it was a spectacle.
The 1 year I was on it, we were workshopping rock opera as like our thing, which fits into the theme, into what we're, I guess what I'm bringing to today's episode.
Yes, perfect transition actually.
Oh my god,
yeah, if you want to go ahead and introduce the person we're talking about.
So I looked at what everyone was talking about and they seemed like fun, cool pop people of the 80s through 90s, so I decided to go with Andrew Lloyd Webber. Just stuffiest, weirdest.
I love it though.
No, we love it. I'm glad we're finally venturing into the realm of musical theater.
Yes. Musical theater is very, it's pop. Like, it became extremely popular a few years ago. Musical theater, like, started playing on the radio and stuff like that. And now everyone got into Hamilton.
Yeah. Truly. Like, I think it's like the default genre for a lot of musical theater is kind of pop nowadays. Mm-hmm. And I think Andrew Lloyd Webber was definitely the, maybe not the first person, but certainly the most prominent person to do that and kind of ride it to giant success. That was my justification.
Yes.
He's like so rich. He's like, isn't he like the wealthiest man in the world or something?
He's not
like
the wealthiest man in the world, but he's probably like one of the top five wealthiest people in Britain. I would just off the top of my head, I would guess. Yeah.
Literally one of the first questions when you Google his name is Andrew Lloyd Webber a billionaire? Probably. And the answer is no, but he tops like
nobody talks like you.
The answer is 800 million pounds is pounds? That's this calculation.
I think at that point you might as well just round it up.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You're a billionaire at that point. Wow. Jesus Christ. Okay, wow.
That's extraordinary. And I remember hearing that he wanted to like buy the Downton Abbey house. That was when I like realized like, oh, he must be really rich because he wanted to buy Downton Abbey.
That is crazy.
And they were like, we actually can't do that.
We can't.
And he was like, but I have the money.
They're like, it's just a set. Yeah. He's like, well, I want
But I want to live there.
Where are the characters and the costumes as well? It's like those are
all actors. You should know this, Andrew.
But it's true that Andy. It is true that Andy L. Andy L. W. I actually feel crazy right now. But his music is poppy. Like you could listen to it. Like there's some songs where I'm like, if this wasn't like a live production or if I wasn't like aware that this was from a musical theater soundtrack, I could believe that this was just like a campy pop rock song. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
I think, like, I don't know how common this was as a practice back in the day when he and Tim Rice were sort of getting started, but definitely a lot of the songs from their early albums, those were also released by the people who sang them as their own singles. For Evita, which was originally released as a concept recording, Julie Covington, I think, was the original, was the one who sang it on that recording. And she I think, was the one who originally had the radio version of Don't Cry For Me, Argentina. I think they did the same thing with, like, Jesus Christ Superstar and
Maybe
Joseph. I don't know.
Yes. Oh my God. No, it's true. It's so funny. Well, we had an episode featuring Ayaka where she brought on Robert Glasper, and he's like huge composer, huge producer. And it was so funny to realize like the geniuses behind all these pop tracks are like very quiet, incredibly talented people who like shape so much of pop culture, and we don't even really know who they are. We don't really know their profiles. It feels like Andrew Lloyd Webber is very much a character, though.
Yeah.
Like, he's not a quiet person by any means.
No, certainly not. I mean, I think he's probably, like, in demeanor, he's probably a little bit of a, like, bashful, timid kind of fellow, but I think his music is kind of larger than life, and also I am under no illusions that his music is you know, it was like Robert Glasper, like crucial to the cultural conversation. Like, I am totally. Yeah. It is in a way, it is for sure. But I'm also like, I also bring him up because he's like kind of silly, you know, like, this bombastic, like pop,
truly,
you know, music from like the 70s and 80s and stuff like that.
Yes.
I think he's just so funny. But he's like, you know, he's obviously like big and like is probably responsible for or played a very big role in the I can't even think of the word, but you know, the mega musical
mega musical vocation. That's the word
of
the day.
We were talking about Jesus Christ Superstar earlier today because we did another interview.
We were.
And I can't get over how like gay that musical is. It's just very queer. It's very queer coded, and I feel like that might just be the 70s. But this, I feel like when I was younger and I thought of like musicals, I thought of like Swells. I thought of like these like cute little quips, these short little moments of talking, whatever. Like definitely Sondheim like specific. Yeah. But with Andrew Lloyd Webber, it really feels like he creates like a pop like landscape. Like he's very like into that type of genre. Do you see those influences in like real pop music? Have you ever listened to a song and been like, huh, I can see Andrew Lloyd Webber like having a hand in this or like influencing this?
Oh, maybe, yeah. Like when you say like he's just sort of like when you say that, do you mean that he's kind of like his songs are very like these broad sort of like suites, like very big orchestra?
Yes, like yeah.
I suppose so. Yeah, I think that's a really good point, and I'm trying to like think of like specific examples and like pop music, but like
not to put you on the spot.
No, this is good to think about. Like I definitely think that like you had pop music in like the 70s and 80s that started to skew way more theatrical and way more dramatic. Yes. And way more with a sound that was very like enriched by various means. Mm. So
right.
I don't know, this isn't like the best example, but like I think of like you know that song Rosanna by Toto?
Yes.
So
oh my god, not,
like yeah. specifically that, because you know the guy Toto is John Williams' son, so he probably has a lot of musical background, but like music that's just like these suites and very like rich and very like theatrical and fun and stuff like that.
Rich. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Oh totally. Yeah,
music
yeah, yeah.
like that
yeah.
coming out of, you know, Andrew Lloyd Webber is sort of like you know pop songs that are it's a weird feedback loop, I think, of like
what's that song, Kiss on the Rose, Kiss by a Rose?
Oh yeah.
Da, 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 that too. Da, da, da. Something like that. Right? Yeah. 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 That song to me feels very theatrical. But it's true. Andrew Lloyd Webber is like, he's kind of like, to me, like the Willy Wonka of like musical theater. Like he's this eccentric figure. Yes. Like there's kind of like some mystique around him. He's like, he's so, so rich. I mean, okay, I'm outing myself as a Comedy Bang Bang listener. Okay. I promise I'm not a straight man. Mm-hmm. Don't crucify me. But one of the big characters on that show is Paul F. Tompkins as Andrew Lloyd Webber. And it's so funny. And like, just like, and that was my first kind of like introduction to him as a character. Mm. And then like you YouTube him or whatever, and you're like, oh my God, he really is like this ridiculous man who like his whole like being is trying to harken back to like an old, like a time of like aristocracy that like does not exist anymore. But like he's still living in that fantasy. Yeah. And I'm like, I mean.
Absolutely.
Like,
Absolutely. Well, and it's like, it is kind of, I guess also why I find him so fascinating is that he made this grand career for himself and made all these riches from kind of effectively the silliest ideas. And part of the silly ideas is like, obviously the like writing pop music, but musical theater, but opera, but whatever. Mm-hmm. But then there's also like the fact that so many of his musicals are just sort of like, I want to write about this time. You know, I want to write a musical, a musical about Jeeves and Wooster or, you know, about famously Cats. Like Cats is the sort of big thing that everyone rolls their eyes at.
Oh my goodness.
But that's huge musical.
Oh, I love.
Yeah.
What is your favorite Andrew Lloyd Webber musical? Do you have, or is that too much? If you have like a,
It changes all the time. So the main four that I kind of vacillate between are, Jesus Christ Superstar, Evita, Cats, and Phantom of the Opera. Just because they were all good to me at individual points in my life and were very important to me.
Wow.
I would say probably of that entire list, the one that I think has maybe aged the best is Jesus Christ Superstar. Yes. Kind of ironically, because it is very much a product of its time, but it works kind of as something in its time, and it's sort of like fun sometimes to see different stagings of it and what they kind of do with the material and how they modernize it or whatever. So that might be my favorite one. The one that I think is like probably the most maybe sophisticated of the works is probably Evita. But it hasn't aged because so much of that musical is just basically like being misogynist. Like some of it is just being like basically like calling her like names for ambition and stuff like that. And it's just like Yeah. And then like her comeuppance at the end, like she dies.
Yeah.
Truly. And then and then probably you have to go like Phantom and then Cats. Yeah.
Yes.
Wow. I love that. It's so interesting because like all four of those musicals have like iconography attached to it, or just like moments from all those stories that even if you haven't seen any of those productions, it's like you know about like the chandelier and Phantom.
Yes.
You know about Evita on the balcony saying, "Don't cry for me, Argentina." Like you know, I mean, from Cats, I don't know. For Cats, you just kind of like, I don't know.
The Cats. Cats. Yeah. Cats, yeah.
Like it's really crazy because it's like, like you said, these are the silliest ideas, and the fact that they work is kind of miraculous, and they're so different. Like, literally thinking about, like, Evita, which is, like, a political, like, biopic, essentially, and then, like, Cats, like, they're so different, these ideas. Like,
the mind range. Of this man. His range, and for sure.
And I, as someone who's half Argentinian, have gone on a journey of that song, Don't Cry For Me, Argentina, because a lot of people will love to be like, oh, you're Argentinian, like, here's something I know about that place is this song that was actually written by a white person. And, like, people love to say that. And, like, I used to be kind of like, oh, whatever. But now I'm in a place where I'm like, I love it.
You love it. That's you great. Own it.
I truly love it. I own it. Oh, I am Evita. Yeah.
That's great.
Oh my god!
That people would be like, you're Argentinian. Well, how about this song by two old British men who,
like, who actually were at war with that country only decades ago. so funny. But do you have? When was like the first time you saw an Andrew Lloyd Webber musical? Was it professional? Was it high school?
So I saw Phantom of the Opera when I was like 7 or 8 years old. Mm. So that was back when Phantom was still in its like 10-year-long Toronto run.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I remember that.
I remember the Mervish posters.
Yeah,
like,
there's all, everywhere. There's a mall, like, I think around Yonge and Dundas Square where they had the, like, I don't know what to call them, sequin phantom masks. And all the adverts and stuff like that. So I saw that when I was like 8 years old. I'd never seen like a musical or like a major production. So I remember seeing that, and that like changed my life. That was so big. And I was like a huge, as a kid, like I was just a huge fan of, I guess there was like two major things that it hit for me. So I was a big fan of like The Little Mermaid. And so like, so the part where he's like, sing for me, you know, like that was just sort of like, I was like watching, you know, Ursula take her voice, and, you know, and then I was also a fan, which I think I kind of have this like soft theory or whatever, that a lot of gay boys really love like masked men, like dark masked men with capes.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is.
Brandon.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And even now there's a whole fetish community is kind of built around that whole sensation.
That's true. Like,
wow. Like, that is really interesting. Effort.
There's like Zorro, there's Batman, there's
Yes. Zorro I always thought was gay. I was like, this is queer.
Zorro is so gay.
I wanted to be so Zorro queer. So bad also. So there's something gender non-confirming.
But you with the hat would look.
Listen, I could rock that shit. I'm trying to get really cast as Zorro on the fucking remake.
You with the sword. You with the sword.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my God,
cute.
I will absolutely write a script called Cool Zorro for you, Ebba.
Yeah.
That is so
it's just
funny.
The blade of Zorro.
That'll be the tagline.
The blade of Zorro. Oh my god.
I saw that when I was 8 years old. I'd never, like, it was just the most amazing thing to me. And for the next year or 2 years of my life, that was my entire personality. I was absolutely the worst person to be around because all I could talk about was Phantom of the Opera. All I could do was talk about opera because I thought it was opera. All I could do was
That's so
I was,
sweet.
I was like nuts, like I was really into that, and that kind of like set me on a track of number one, loving other Andrew Lloyd Webber shows and loving other musicals, but then also getting really into this is a tangent, we don't have to necessarily go down this path, but I got really into classic rock because of that. So that was what I was into in high school.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Yeah. I've been saying classic rock is gay. Classic it's rock gay. Is gay.
It is. Yeah. It is. It's men in costumes and makeup.
Machismo and whatever, like, very, mm-hmm. like, yeah.
Literally. Theatrical, big, yeah.
That is so, oh my God, I love the idea of a kid who's just, like, my whole personality is Phantom of the Opera.
Yes!
Like, a mask and a cape. Like,
so precocious.
You know. That's great that you love it because no other kid did.
Aww.
That was a bit much, but.
I feel like you and I were very similar. Yeah.
Were you
way.
Also like
just like we were yeah I wasn't necessarily into like theater or like musicals yet, but I was big into like Sailor Moon. I had the fake tiara, I had the fake like buns, like my hair was brown and like nappy, but the buns were like long blonde and like silky, and I'd wear that to school, and I loved it so much no one else loved it, but it was like this deep appreciation for the campiness of like
Sailor Moon. I loved Sailor Moon.
Oh my god. I love
that's so beautiful.
So like what's your favorite Andrew Lloyd Webber like musical project?
Oh, musical project? That's a great question.
Mm-hmm. Oh my god, Abba.
Okay. Maybe I have like two, I guess. These would still be his musicals, but Starlight Express. Do you know anything about Starlight Express?
So yes, I have questions. Brandon, sure. I have questions. Did people
die? Starlight Express?
Wasn't there a thing that like, okay, and maybe I am, okay, judging by Abbott Brand's reactions, I don't think anybody died. But wasn't there like a lot of accidents or something because they were like on rollerblades and like people were like falling off the stage? I feel like I heard like jokes about that, like musical theater jokes, but like, that's like a famously like cursed production.
Accidents happened because there was no way that you have a musical with that. With that silly of a gimmick, with that amount of people doing it and not have any accidents. So I'm sure, I don't know if people died, but I would not be surprised. I don't know too much about it.
I don't think people died either. As I said it out loud, I was like, I feel like people would talk about that more. You know what I mean?
I think it just ended because it was like, what? Like,
It's regarded as like one of his flops, I think. Is early, I believe so, right.
Yeah. Like, it probably was big for a little bit. And I think what emboldened him to create that was the success of Cats. Because Cats, it is just Cats, but it's trains. This is my understanding.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's just Cats, but it's trains. That's his pitching. So, okay, you love Cats. You love Cats. Picture everything about Cats. Trains,
picture everything
honey.
About right. Cats.
Trains, yeah. Instead.
But that's probably my favorite of his projects because it's just it's like when people tell you to believe in yourself and you get a little bit of like positive feedback, that's like a lesson to also be like, but also don't always believe in yourself all the time. Like listen to people.
You can't exist within that. Yeah.
Totally.
And then there's the Love Never Dies. That's the other one that I think is my favorite project. That's his sequel to Phantom of the Opera.
Oh.
Okay.
And it's bad. It's very bad. It's like
what? I literally had no idea there was a sequel
For Phantom of the Opera, and it never made it to Broadway. It started out in the West End, and it had like a bunch of eyes all over the place. You can watch it. I think I bought it on iTunes. Is I'm watching trying to watch it at some point, but it's like not tuneful. Yeah. It's rockier than Phantom of the Opera. It's really like unsettling or something. Just really off.
That's really funny to me. I think there's also something really funny about somebody being so famous and so rich that they kind of have so much leeway to like fuck up and make really bad things.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. And that's Andrew Lloyd Webber. And one last quick factoid about this actually is that so he was writing this musical on this special piano that he was writing on that would like transcribe or record or preserve all of the music that he was writing as he was sort of like doing it, so he wouldn't have to sit down and sort of like notate manually. And what happened was his cat jumped into the piano at one point, like when he was just like away from and deleted all of the music originally. So he had to like re-transcribe or right, or whatever. All of the music. But that was like the universe saying like, don't, you don't need it. Phantom is still running on Broadway. You don't need this money.
That's so funny.
Yeah. But you don't need this money. Speaking of money, a message from our sponsors.
And we're back. With Brandon Hackett talking about Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Oh my God. So I'm curious to know, I feel like whenever we talk about like pop stars and just like artists in general on this podcast, we always kind of talk about how much they influenced us aesthetically and just introduced us to like new aspects of our lives. Like I always pick up on like gay stuff in pop music. And as we just talked about, I'm curious though, like did Andrew Lloyd Webber, did anything about his music or his projects as a whole, like influence the way you not only dress, but like aesthetically the way you see the world? Like that, was that like a thing for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, I definitely think, I mean, for one, yeah, like with Phantom,
the mask, yeah, and the
like
cape,
I very
yeah.
that very much was yeah. to me just like the pinnacle of like cool and sexy. Mm-hmm.
But like as a teenager, you know, like was that ever? Yeah.
I don't know if directly any his work mm-hmm. did, but I will say that his music. So I guess this is maybe a good place to kind of like spiral or dovetail back with like
yes, go off. But, yeah.
Because I got so into that type of like music, that sort of like his like mm-hmm. pop opera sort of stuff, that got me into like the idea of like rock opera, which then got mm-hmm. me into like The Who, which is my first favorite like band when I was in high school. But then that opened me up to classic rock, and then that became the thing mm-hmm. that I loved in high school was like classic rock. And that became, mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of high school boys in general, like straight boys, love classic rock, and that music just speaks to them for some reason. Yes. I just, for whatever reason, was into dad rock as a kid. So I don't know if that fully answers the question, but that.
Yeah. No, it does. Yeah. Because I definitely think, like, we were talking about this with our last guest that we just interviewed, but like. There is something about like kids getting really into like classic rock, like dad rock in high school. And like, we're like wondering like, is it the angst? And like, as we're having this conversation, I'm very much realizing that it's like the theatrics of it. Like it's very like full of drama. Yes. And I feel like straight boys like attach themselves to like the bro culture of it, the culture around it. But like queer people who are like also just like more, I don't know, just more open-minded. It feels like there is a genuine attraction and like pull because of how dramatic the music is, like how sonically dramatic. Like it is like it is just musical theater with like big guitars and like
100%. Like I can only like for a long time I was only listening to classic rock albums that were like rock operas or that had like narratives, because that was all I was just like, they have to have narratives. I need to be, you know?
Yes.
I can't just listen to someone playing on a guitar.
Exactly. It has to have a story. I need to know. Yeah.
Yeah, like it's so interesting because I used to listen to like musical theater soundtracks like mm-hmm. in middle school, and I would also listen to like Green Day.
Yes.
And there was always this feeling of like you're saying, like, even though it's like, yeah, I guess to most they seem like polar opposites, but like, no, like Boulevard of Broken Dreams, like that's a power ballad. Like, that's truly, he's singing his heart out. And then like that compared with, I don't know what musicals I was listening to at the time. Mm. I don't know. Honestly, I think it might've been Les Mis, which is kind of shocking to admit. Mm. But then you listen to like a song like, oh my God, what's that song that girl she's the girl who dies and she's singing, she has that song and she's like, he doesn't love me.
On my own?
On my own. Mm-hmm. That one. That song. Like literally, like those two songs achieve like the same goal for me.
Yeah.
Even though they're different. I get the same feeling. I get the same, I don't know, like visceral reaction. Mm-hmm. I get the same emotional reaction. Like it's like it's gay. And mm-hmm. I feel like so many straight men, they're obsessed with like, I feel like they use like technique as like a facade to be like, oh, I'm interested because that guy's like a really good guitar player. And I'm like,
it's like the maybe logic of it.
Exactly. It's like they're trying to like make it mathy. And it's like, maybe you just like seeing like this person just like pour their soul out on stage and be big and, and be emotional. Maybe like that is providing you a sense of catharsis because you're like, like I have emotions too. But these straight, men, they aren't thinking that. Exactly. Because they're only thinking about one thing, and that's just sex.
I want to know, like, so being into musical theater, I mean, my school was really, really big, and it was very Black. So the kids who were into musical theater were also just into, like, pop music. Like, we were heavy on music. Like, just very into anything that felt theatrical and big. But I imagine it can be very, not isolating, but there, how many kids are really into like Andrew Lloyd Webber, you know? Like, did that, do you feel like that kind of set you apart from other kids? Or like, did it help you find your people? Like, your
life? I think that for sure set me apart from a lot of kids. Okay. Because I think the running feeling, the running theme of my life, or the way that I feel, I think a lot of the time is I feel a little bit like either like an alien, or I feel like I'm way older than everyone else. And I don't mean that in terms of like maturity. I just like in terms of like
how much you know. You're very wise.
I don't even know if it's that. I think it's just like in terms of like taste and the way, you know, like the way I interact with the world. Like I'm like out of touch a tiny bit. And I'm like 34, like, but I feel like I'm like 60 or something, you know.
There's something very tasteful about that, though, I feel like.
And
like,
listeners should know, Brandon's saying this, but Brandon's literally wearing the hippest crew neck sweater I've ever seen.
And,
hipster glasses, like headphones, like even the few like things I could see in the background. I'm seeing books, I'm seeing framed movie posters. Sure. I'm like, this is not an old 60-year-old. Beats. I was gonna say there are Beats, but I didn't know for sure. But I got them
for
that
free
beat.
With my computer.
I saw that beat.
And that's an old person deal.
Okay. that's a person who is good with money deal. Okay, anyone is taking that deal.
Not anyone taking that deal.
Oh but God. Yeah, it's like, because it was like, it took me, so I was like really into Andrew Lloyd Webber up until probably like grade 9 or something. And like, I went to a different high school than my elementary school, obviously.
Okay.
But like everyone in high school was like into, like everyone is into like cool music. And I was still hanging on to this like old fashioned, like, you know, I was still like, you know, like, ooh, Busta for Joan, like like just really out of step. So I think to answer your question again, I think that really kind of set me apart and made me feel a little bit like I'm constantly the oldest man in the room.
Especially at that age, people, like, your taste in music, it's like when you're so young, you don't have that, you don't have a lot of things that are like, you can point to be like, these are like, this is my career, this is my like family, whatever. Like, you don't have that. So you're like, here's my taste in music. Yes. Here, like the clothes
That's
I
so
wear.
Smart,
like,
Ben.
You're kind thank you. I'm feeling smart today.
You're saying smart shit.
It's because I'm literally, I'm eating a little protein heavy sandwich, I think.
I'm not sitting with that
But no, here's the thing, because the chicken.
Just like such a surprise.
Well, I'm waiting for it to get a bit more room temp, because when I got the chicken out of the fridge, it was like cold, and it's like, I want it to be a bit more like.
Edible.
You know, I don't need, you both get it.
Yeah.
But truly, it's like when you have bands that you like, and you're like, oh, well, like, I like classic rock, people are going to be like, oh, there's that fear of like, you're not cool.
Yes.
And that's like, I remember in high school, like, it was really like, it almost felt like keeping up, being like, okay, well, like, is this still cool? Is it lame to listen to this now? Like, always kind of like looking over my shoulder to see like what other people were listening to. And then the older you get, you're like,
who cares? And it kind of puts you light years ahead. Cause I feel like when I was younger, I was very mature. Like, the things that I liked were really like old school. I liked a lot of old music, old aesthetics, like stuff like that. But that's just because like my dad was into old stuff. And so like, I don't know, that connected with me in a way. And in high school, I never thought that it set me apart from kids, but kids, I would definitely mention like stuff like that. And kids would be like, man, shut up. Like, what are you talking about? Like, no one cares about that old shit. Yeah. But like, it puts you light years ahead, because like, when I started having to be in spaces working with other adults and like, you know, like working creatively with adults, everyone would be like, this little girl over here is actually 25. And I was like, no, I'm 18. Like I just know the old people shit, because I think that in elementary school and high school, that stuff hurts.
Sure.
Like being the odd one out hurts, but it puts you light years ahead.
No one ever wants to be, you know, the odd person out. Like you just want to blend in high school.
Exactly.
At Cardinal Carter, were you guys doing musicals there? Yeah,
we
did.
We would do like, I think the general habit was like one musical every 2 years, but it was sort of like that habit was sort of breaking when I was there. But yeah, we did we did The Music Man, and we did Into the Woods in Greece when I was there.
Into the Woods. Oh my God. I love that.
Okay, but the Disney version of that musical was frightening to me.
I haven't watched it. Is it so? What's tea on that? Like,
it was it was shocking.
Shocking.
I didn't like it. It was like a dark, and then like, oh my God! I also like for so much stuff happens in that story that's shocking to me. Like Anna Kendrick, Emily Blunt is the baker. She dies. Shocking to me. And then they didn't, it wasn't even clear in the movie. She just kind of like fell. And then the next thing they know, they're like, well, she died. Sad. And I was like, when did that happen?
Well, she did. You know she did.
And I think Allison Janney was the giant.
Oh, right.
Just a lot of that movie was frightening to me. But musicals in, no, don't, Brandon, don't see it. But musicals in high school are, there's such like, if like I wasn't in musical theater in high school, but like I had friends who were in it and I loved seeing the musicals. But there's something so beautiful to me about a high school musical of that, like, everyone performing. Like, you cannot tell them that they're not on Broadway.
No.
Like, everyone is doing their absolute best. And I honestly think, like, whether the production is good or not, if you want to see an actor absolutely, like, sweat for it, look no further than a high school production.
Oh, it's so always. Pure. Like, so pure.
It's so pure. It's so earnest. And it's, like... they really, it's like everyone, you look at like the chorus people, like everyone is really like feeling their fantasy. Mm-hmm. I'm obsessed with it. Would you get parts or were you a girl?
That's such a bitch. I got parts. I was...
Were you good or were you bad?
Like, well, no, it's not even because high school, especially with art schools, casting was always like very odd.
Yeah, it's weird, the process.
It's weird. It's a weird thing. But did you play
roles? I did, yeah. I mean, I think when I entered high school, I wasn't necessarily like, I entered it like the drama guy from my elementary school, but I got there and I was like too shy, and it took me like years to warm up.
Aww.
But I eventually started to get parts. Yeah. Like, I was like, I thankfully could sing, and it was also like I was lucky because I had like this voice basically at 14, which is like weird, like uncanny. Whoa. But like people were really like, hey, you should sing, or you should like do some acting, and be like, I'm trying.
I'm trying.
I have a voice where people would say the absolute opposite of that. They'd be like, you should stick to stuff. Oh,
no.
That's not that.
No.
Also, like, it's like everyone should be able to do anything, and like, I don't know.
Exactly. Yeah.
True.
Yeah.
But that is why, because you have a very, like, your voice is so velvety and bassy. As a, like, if I was a teacher, like, and I saw like a pupil with that voice, I'd be like, you, I must foster this.
Snatched you up, right? Like,
do they snatch you up?
We're setting you up with an agent. You have to be
big. My boy.
My boy.
My boy.
Yeah, thankfully we had a someone who would like do vocal work and stuff like that in our drama program. She was really like nurturing and stuff like that. So yes.
Aww,
so I eventually got like I started to get a lot of a standalone singing parts a little bit.
Yes. Yeah.
So even if I wasn't like a lead, I'd get like a featured moment, which is fun.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love that.
I'm not a singer, but I always love the idea of a solo. Like when there's a group number and someone pops out and they just have one verse where it's just them, I'm like, what that must feel like.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you weren't in the in the musical. Were you in the drama program at your school?
I was just in drama. I was just in playing.
So it was a separate program from musical theater.
It was separate. Yeah, musical theater was different.
Just like
They did. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. I so badly in high school wanted to go to an art school, in Brampton, and my dad wouldn't let me because all my cousins went to the high school that I went to. And I remember being so fucking livid for years that I didn't get to go to an art school because my high school, like, we did musicals and we did them well. And, like, it was a whole, like, it was a school-wide affair where, like, the art kids would make the props and the set and, like, the tech kids would get credits from, like, working with us or whatever. But it was a thing where, like, at an art school, you would do, like, you'd do a big play every year, which we did that. We did Into the Woods. We did, like Romeo and Juliet, but then we had to fucking do a play that celebrated our school's 10-year anniversary. All right. So, listener, let it be known, Brandon just gave the stankest face. It was the most stank musical. It was so sick, and it was a Catholic school, so it was like, this is what our school is like, and these are the programs that we have going on. And like, kids would come on, and like, there was a scene where all the jocks, we were supposed to play jocks, all the jocks came on stage, and they sat on these on the black boxes, and then Lose Yourself started playing. Like, that was the way we introduced the athletes. You only get one shot. Like, it was so insane and wild. So I fucking berate my parents every single day for the fact that they made me.
I mean, here's the thing, though. You do a lot of that stuff in art school, too. It's not like we're, like, cool, like, the school.
It's no, it's literally the same. Yeah.
We're also,
a lot of the
stuff that, you know, a lot of the stuff we had to write ourselves. And we were children.
Yeah. You know? Literally, yeah, my school, oh my God, I can't even believe I'm saying this, but every year there was our school did a fringe festival, like the drama, it was called Drama Pro, that was like the straight theater program, and we do a fringe festival where like everyone would have to write a play and then a panel would pick the plays that would be made, and they were all like written by like 16, 17 year olds. And truly, some of the most, to this day, some of the most wild theater I've ever seen in my life has been these student shows. Just like literally a play. Because it's like, you know, if you're a teenager and you try to write like an epic drama, like what that would look like. It's like literally like three people like killing themselves in the play. Like truly the play starts on stage. And then guess what? The audience, we're leaving the stage. We're going outside. That's where the rest of the play is happening. Just so much stuff like that where it was like, oh my God, I did a play where like, this actually wasn't written by a student, it was written by an Oakwood teacher, where I played like a gay kid who captured his bully and then set him ablaze. The play is called Small Sticks.
Oh yeah, you told me about that.
And it truly, like, that was a play, and it was literally like, the whole play was like him calling me like a faggot, and then me being like, well, guess what? Now you're the faggot. And then I burnt him alive.
Please tell me you said the second faggot with like an English accent to really drive the point home.
Faggot. Oh my God. No, it was so bad. And I also got doored before opening night, so I did the show.
No.
No! You get doored so often.
I know.
Oh my God.
Is it because I'm biking too fast or because drivers are bad?
I think drivers are bad.
But I think it is.
Drivers are bad.
Drivers are bad.
As we get to the end of our recording, I really want to know, like, for other pop stars, it's always so easy for us to be like, oh, this is what we want to see the pop star doing before the end of their career, before they die or whatever. What do you want Andrew Lloyd Webber to do before his career ends?
Oh, that's a very good question.
And it could be anything.
I would like to see Andrew Lloyd Webber write another sequel to something that does not deserve or need a sequel. So like if he writes a sequel to Sunset Boulevard or something, like a story that is clearly over at the end.
It's done.
Oh my god. But I'd be remiss to not ask this question before the Andrew Lloyd Webber episode ends. But Brandon, how did you feel about Cats the motion picture?
Yeah.
We need to talk about it just a little bit.
Well, I'll try to make this short. I mean, I think I loved it too.
I loved it.
I loved it too. And I love that it was a mess. I saw it three times in theaters. And I went to see it live like a week before because it was a friend of mine was in the production. And
Oh, wow.
I loved it. I thought it was like absolutely, I thought it's the best it could have gone for the concept. I have obviously ideas for how to actually have make it to make it work. Mm-hmm. Like, I, you know, it's a movie that's like hyper literal and like gets rid of all gets rid of a spectacle, or doesn't know that you can't really translate the spectacle of a stage show to a movie. So like it needs another spectacle, like animation or something like that. I guess I'm just sort of happy it exists, because I feel like for a long time my persona in comedy became just out of nowhere likes cats, or knows a lot about cat musical. Like, that's a thing that people still like bring to me.
I love that.
That's really funny.
And now it's and now I feel like everyone is kind of in on it, even though people are still more confused now because of the movie. But I feel like now now like everyone, it's everyone's thing. So now I don't have to.
Everyone's burdens.
I don't have to be the one explaining.
I love that you loved it, because for me it was my first time ever seeing the musical, period. Mm. And so the songs were catchy. Magical Mr. Mistopheles, I was singing that for days.
They really straightened him up, though, in that movie.
They did. Is he supposed to be queer?
Okay, I'm going to give you homework. YouTube, type in Magical Mr. Mistopheles. They'll probably have they'll probably have a clip from the they did like the best filmed version of Cats is like when they filmed the actual show back in like 97, like a prestige filmed sort of version. Watch that and you'll know exactly what I mean. He's like just some sort of like straight nice boy in this version. In the stage version, he is the a beacon of queer flamboyant.
Yes.
Okay. Good. I'm glad I know this now, because thank you for please. Setting me straight.
That is so funny that they wouldn't make him as queer in the movie, especially in this day and age. It's like
it's silly.
Well, I love that you said you saw it in theaters three times, because what I love so much about the movie is when I saw it, it was like, oh my god, I guess so a year ago now. Over then, but it was like in theaters, AMC, Young and Dundas. It was like peak like Cats like controversy. Like everyone's talking about it. The theater was packed. Everyone was drunk. It was truly like watching like a Rocky Horror production. People were singing along. Yes. People were clapping after every song. And what was so beautiful is like obviously people were laughing at the movie. But what was extraordinary when Jennifer Hudson, when she had her moment where she sang, Brandon, I forget the name. Grisabella. Remind me.
She came as Grisabella singing Memory.
Grisabella. Memories, yes. When she sang that, the audience earnestly, when she finished the song, cheered and clapped and applauded.
As they should. It was, give her her roses.
It was really cool to see it. Truly, it felt like I had never had like a movie experience like that before. It was really fun. It was fun.
It's one of those rare, it's like maybe one of the purest experiences I've had in a theater, where everyone is just like on board with the silly.
Yes.
Which then gets them on board with the like earnest element of it.
Yes. I will say the biggest time I've ever laughed in a theater, was when Jennifer Hudson was like crying and she had a little bit of snot. Some woman in the audience is like, get her a tissue. And the audience lost it. It was so disrespectful. But it was like the audience like
Dame Judi Dench as Deuteronomy, old Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy says, you are my jellicle choice. And then someone in the audience is like, what? I couldn't tell if they were like incredulous because they still didn't understand the concept, or if they were just like, no, clearly it was someone else they'd seen.
Clearly it was Mr. Mistopheles or Rebel Wilson.
I just genuinely love that so much of this musical is just silliness for silliness' sake. Like you know, I really do appreciate that, and I think more projects like I feel like Andrew Lloyd Webber, his name alone invokes like opulence and royalty and being very stush and proper. But then you see the shit he makes, and you're like, fuck?
He's just a goofy little boy.
He's a goofy little boy. Oh, but thank you so much for doing the podcast. Where can people find you, and what do you have coming up?
Well, thank you very much for having me. This is very fun.
Of course.
Where can people find me? Generally on Twitter, at Brandon Hackett. That's mostly what I'm doing. I don't really have anything coming up yet, although I guess we do have some more like Untitled Blast Sketch Project stuff on the horizon. And sorry, what was the last thing that I...
Oh, yeah, and, like, Yeah, you told people where they can find you and projects coming up. Great. I think we're good. Yeah. Did we cover everything?
Me too. I was like, what else is there? Are you vaccinated? Like,
oh,
I don't know.
Probably never. At this rate. Probably never.
Yeah, at this rate. Like,
truly.
Honestly, we're all moving to the U.S. just to get vaccinated. Yeah. I feel I that know. Is the second great migration. Wait.
Second. The second great. What was the first? What's the first one we're referring to?
My head hurts. I need to go eat.
No, I love it. Oh my God. I'm so excited to eat the second half of the sandwich.
Yes.
I'm obsessed with holding this up.
Why you're not going to eat it. I feel like you're just going to walk around with it all day.
I have it like as a little brooch. Like.
Ew! The chicken's falling out. Anyways, okay. Thanks so much again, Brandon. Yes, follow Brandon on social media. Subscribe to Nostalgique and rate our
review.
Podcast.
Subscribe.
Yes. That subscribe. Helps. Leave a comment. And you can follow me at Abaquan, Abaquan on Twitter and an extra N on Instagram.
And you can follow me on Instagram at JKMissThing and at BenSosaWrite on Twitter.
Yes! Okay. Cool. All right. I guess it's time to say bye.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you. That was so much
love
fun.
That. I'm glad. Thank you so much for your
pleasure.
Okay, so you've been listening to ABBA.
And you've been listening to Ben. Bye.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Sonar Network.
Sonar!
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's JUVEDERM.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's JUVEDERM.com.